We're going to do something different instead, something I've done in the past but have never done here, and that is a question box service. And that's why you got an index card when you entered the sanctuary this morning. If you did not get an index card this morning, would you raise your hand and our ushers will provide you with one. What you get to do is write a question that you would like me to address. And during the time of the sermon, I'm going to answer as many as I can, knowing that I can't answer all of them. Some I will save to maybe address on my blog, or you give me a really good juicy one, maybe I'll make it a sermon topic in the future. But we'll see what we can do this morning, and I think you win by coming to the early service today because the chances of my getting to more of the questions are higher. So everybody's all set there? Okay. If one of the wonderful things about this kind of a service is more than you getting to ask me questions, which is fine in of itself. I hope you always feel that you can ask me questions that you want to. I get to hear what's on everybody's mind, and so do you. And that's kind of fun to find out what everybody's thinking about. So I had some wonderful helpers who sorted your questions into a couple of general categories that I've learned to expect at a time like this. And what I thought I would do, I haven't seen any but the first couple so far, I thought I would read the ones out of each category and choose one to answer and then move on to the next category. And if we have time to go back around, great. And as I said, other things we'll put off to future sermons or blogs. So thank you in advance for your questions. And I'll be really impressed if I don't have to censor any of them. So the first category is Unitarian Universalism in general. Please, what is the one-minute elevator speech for what is Unitarianism? How do we reconcile our love of education and questioning without being elitist? How do the rituals of religious holidays enhance or enrich rather than distract from the Unitarian universal search and evolution of the spirit of a Sunday service? Let me, on this first pass, address the potential elitism question, because I think that's an important one for us, especially as we increasingly realize that we have a message that appeals to all people and that it is not something that's restricted to just the well-educated. And there has been, in our movement, a tendency to think that somehow those other people wouldn't be interested. And it's really based on a lot of elitism and snobbery. And I had the very fortunate experience of having the first congregation that I served be much more working class than a typical Unitarian Universalist congregation. And that was really good for me because I will admit to a bit of educational snobbery that comes in my past. And what I learned from that group of people was that they were incredibly thoughtful, incredibly committed, and very much Unitarian Universalists. They had not had the opportunity to receive as much education as some members of our congregations. They often needed, this is as I'm generalizing them as a group, and that obviously has its perils in any group. On average, they had less opportunity, and they came with fewer skills that are assumed from that. And so they needed to learn the skills in that congregation. And what I learned from that is that we lose a tremendous resource and tremendous leadership when we don't find a way to help people learn within our congregational context the skills that are needed for leadership. So I would encourage everyone, especially if you, like me, can admit to an educational prejudice, to think carefully about the words that come out of your mouth, that assume that everybody went to college, that assumes that everybody watches PBS, only PBS, things like that, because our message isn't limited to that people. If our message is only limited to their that demographic, then I'm not sure we have a very good message. If our message doesn't speak to the people who have not had opportunities that that we wish everyone would have, then we really need to think about what our purpose is here if we're just an intellectual book club, if you will. So that's been something that I've had to become much more humble about in my time, and I'm very thankful for that lesson. I need to keep my categories together here. Okay, 1U happenings. Sorry. I'm not going to censor it. I'm just going to read it second. What do you see as the greatest needs and strengths of 1U? Any ideas on how to build on our strengths and address the needs? And the one that made me chuckle is, whatever are we going to do with the RE building? So we'll go there. Earlier in the service, I mentioned the Got Dreams town hall meetings that are happening starting next week. There are three opportunities. We used to have a congregational meeting each October, and now that with two services, that becomes a scheduling issue. Also, with increased membership, that becomes limiting in terms of the amount of conversation we can have. So now we're instead having three town hall meetings so that, and Christine Haskins will be facilitating those, so we know that they'll be well facilitated, conversations about the dreams of this congregation. And we know that what to do with the west side of our campus has to be an important part of that. I don't have the answer for that. You all have the answer for that. And what we need to talk about is not only what to do technically, renovate, start over, something in between, why? That's the question. So we do something with the west side of that campus. To what end? What difference will it make to this congregation? And more importantly, what difference will it make to the world, to the larger community? And so I hope that we will do something with the west side of the campus that really makes a difference to this community. I'm just seeing which one had the most. The next one is personal, so things about me. Because I know they're always there, so I gave them that category. I'm just going to read them through first. If you could have one supernatural power, what would it be? And how would you use it if it could only be used once? What is your elevator speech about being a UU? So that theme is coming up. Is there a particular piece of music which highlights or underscores your religious views? Ooh, that one's going to need thought. Apparently someone came prepared. Theirs is printed out. What is your vision for beloved community, and how do we get there from here? Oops. What questions do you have for us? What questions do you think we should have for each other? Okay. Well, well, well. The vision of beloved community actually was last week's sermon topic. There's a mini version on my blog, and you can listen to the audio. How we get there from here, that's going to be a process. But it's a good question, and I think a lot of it has to do with why I was supportive of the theme of compassion for this year, is that I think that we need to learn amongst ourselves how to talk to each other, how to handle our conflicts, how to wrestle with difficult things. We need the skills of being community. I think that's an important part of how we become increasingly a beloved community, and how we then can turn around and help the rest of our larger community be a place of peace and justice as well. So I think we have to learn skills. Our society doesn't provide us with the skills that we need. It teaches us competition, teaches us a lot of snarkiness, and I think that the skills of compassion and listening and respect are highly needed. I'm going to throw in one more piece about the what questions do you have for us. I sprinkle those into my sermons all the time. But I want to put in a plug here for the Francis David Cafe. Those of you who haven't had a chance to attend one, they're about once a month on a Friday evening. There are cookies and tea. But the way we do it is it's whoever shows up are the right people to be there. We've had 4 people. We've had 14 people. And it's a drop-in. You can come once, and there's no commitment. But what we do is everybody writes a question. And then we go around and answer them one at a time and get everybody's different perspectives. So it's an opportunity for people to put out questions to the other people in the room and just see where we are. And we typically get the same range of questions that I get on a morning like this. So, theology. Want to bet somebody asked me the meaning of life? They usually do. Talk about religion and spirituality and why there is sometimes a conflict. Compare spiritual practices of agnostics versus atheists. That's an interesting one. What place, if any, does Christian tradition have in Unitarian Universalism? I find siege mentality psychology interesting and disturbing. Is that at the heart of Christian fundamentalism and radical Islam? Wow. That's not going on the first pass. Let me start on this pass with religion and spirituality and why there is sometimes a conflict. I actually recently got into a little bit of a blog war with some other people in our tradition and in related traditions on the topic of the phrase, I'm spiritual but not religious. And I've often heard people say that, often in our new member classes, in our newcomer orientations. That's one of the phrases that people use. It comes from a variety of people, sometimes people who've been wounded by religion, and so they have deep yearning in their hearts, but they have not found a religious institution in which to practice their spirituality. Sometimes those people come into congregations eventually, and sometimes they never do. I have often found, my experience has been, they're often deeply thoughtful, caring people. However, a colleague in the United Church of Christ, which is a liberal, very liberal Christian tradition, felt that had had the experience of people using that expression to dismiss religion. Like, I'm so spiritual, I don't need church. And the minister, the UCC minister, wrote a piece. She was fatigued by that particular attitude, and I can imagine being fatigued by that particular attitude. And her point was, you know, it's easy to sit on a mountainside and think great thoughts, but it's hard to be in community. It's when you come into community that you actually have to put things into practice and be committed to something. And so that was her point of view. And while I agree with her point of view that religious community is a really vital part of how we can learn to be human, I didn't particularly care for the snarky attitude with which she wrote her piece, which went viral. And so I just said, wow, if I was a spiritual but not religious person and I read this, I wouldn't come to your church. And so I thought, isn't there a way that we can keep our hearts and our minds open to the people who have that deep longing for something, to be connected to something larger than themselves? And for me, that's what spirituality is. It's being connected to something other than my own concerns. It's not just all about me. I think there are lots of people who will never step foot in a church who do deeply spiritual work in the world. And I don't think we need to get in a fight with them. I do think religious community is very important. And yet, I think many of us have seen instances where religion, or what is called religion, became so structure-based that it was deadening to the spirit. And we certainly can point to examples of where religion was spiritually harmful. And so I think that there needs to be a dialogue and a tension between those two things. The institution, the religion, the word religion means to bind. I think it's good to allow ourselves to be committed, to be bound, but I think we need to know when it is feeding spirits and helping to heal our world and when it has become something that's frankly dangerous. So I see those two tensions. So I think it's an important conversation, and I think that one of the largest growing populations religiously in our country right now is none of the above and the spiritually but not religious group. And I think we have the opportunity to be a place where they might find a spiritual community. Politics and current events. What in particular can we do as a church, if appropriate, to support Occupy Orlando, Fair is Fair, and by extension, Occupy Wall Street? Another is, I assume my congregation, one you, my beloved community, enfolds politically progressives, liberals, moderates, conservatives, ultra-conservatives. How can any congregation advocate for human rights in our current political polarization? Those are kind of related. Thanks. I went to Occupy Orlando yesterday. If you have been reading my Facebook posts, you know that I think that our voices need to be part of that movement. Not because I think they have it all figured out, because there's clearly a tremendous amount of confusion and chaos as things continue to emerge. But yesterday, there were Occupy events in 950 cities around the world, I think 800 of them in this country. There are 83 countries. There's something that this movement is speaking to about what we have created and allowed to evolve as our economic system. I believe that the history of Unitarian Universalism and the stands that we have taken say that we need an economically just world, that that is part of our vision of a beloved community. Now, we may not agree on exactly what we should do to create a just system, but I'm pretty sure there's nobody in here. This is a risk. I try not to say all or nothing statements. That is going to say to me, no, I really want an unjust system. Now, what that looks like, what a just system would look like, depends a lot on a lot of assumptions that we make about human nature, about how systems work. So we need to have conversations. For me, the biggest issue of this Occupy movement is that we have a situation in which the media and money interests are able to control the dialogue. And that, to me, breaks our principle of democracy. If we believe in democracy, we need to be hearing lots of voices. So I think Unitarian Universalism has something to say about justice, about compassion, about equality, about democracy, about creating a world with more peace, justice and liberty for everyone. So will I necessarily agree with the folks that are leading Occupy Orlando? No, I watched their Facebook roll by last night and went, oh my goodness. But they're working it out. They're working it out, and they're having a conversation. And we need to be part of that conversation. We need to be advocating for a more just world. So let's have that conversation here, and let's add our voices to the larger conversation. And I don't think that that's a matter of political perspective. I think all those voices are needed. And then the famous other category. How can I keep the faith when all the twists of fate, big and small, turn against me? How do we encourage, teach people to be more welcoming? Who are some of the great authors to read? That'd be great to have everybody chime in and list the couple of books they think everyone should read. If this day isn't wonderful, what is it? That sounds like a sermon topic. Why is there so much apathy in the world today? Oh, the last one got censored. You know who you are. Which one shall we do? How can I keep the faith when all the twists of fate, big and small, turn against me? And this will be where we'll end for this morning. I think some of us, and recent research shows this, that we have different sort of set points of happiness and contentment. And so some of us are sort of naturally happy and find the best in any situation we find ourselves in, and some struggle more with that. And that if you list all the positive things that you would like to happen and all the negative things that you don't want to happen, and then one of those things happens, either a bad thing or a good thing, 6 months later, you will still be at your set point of happiness. It might temporarily fluctuate, but you will adjust, good or bad, to the fates that life brings you and return to that set point. There are some things that can help people adjust those. Meditation, actually, is one of them, spiritual practice. There are a couple others, but without my references in front of me, I'm not going to go there. But I think when I talk about faith, what I mean is the ability to take the next step, the ability to say, I have enough confidence that the world around me, the people around me, and me, myself, can take the next step, whatever happens. And sometimes that whatever happens is really awful. We would never, ever wish it on anybody. And yet we see people who are able to find strength in that, to learn more compassion. You know, I'll take the example, and it's easy now that everything has worked out okay, of my daughter's recent pregnancy and the early birth of her child. I would never wish that on anyone. I wish my grandson had gone to term. But boy, I learned a lot. I'll be a better minister for having gone through that process. I feel really much more deeply committed to making sure that healthcare access that my daughter had is available to everyone, because I know there are a lot of women who would not have navigated those waters as smoothly. So for me, I think it's always looking for what can I learn from this situation, and that doesn't mean I like it. You know, I don't go with the everything happens for a reason, or there must be a lesson here. I look for a lesson. I see if there's something, but sometimes things just stink. And I think that that's okay. And I think we beat ourselves up when we think that we did something to deserve the bad things that happened to us. It's a good idea to check. It's a good idea to check and see if you did something. Like, might I have made a different choice that would have influenced this for the better? That's a worthy question to ask. But once you've done that, then the dwelling, why does the universe hate me? That just adds to your suffering. And I think that's where we get really stuck. So when things happen, and sometimes they happen for a long time and many times in a row, the question is, what can I change? What can I learn? How do I keep going? And we come back to the question of religious community. Where can I look for support? And I hope that this congregation will be a source of support for people in those difficult times. And I'll use this to plug my pet peeve. If you come and things are going well and you support the congregation, then you find, wow, you're really overwhelmed with life and you're tired and you don't want to come anymore. You say, I can't go to church. I'm too tired. I can't do anything. On that day, please come to church. On that day, come to church. Come and let this community be your support. Well, thank you for your questions. I will review them later for possibilities to work them into other things, and it's great to hear what is on your minds. I'm sorry that I could not answer them all.